Last time we met on a Friday, so we spoke about the early Tanoim. And the early Tanoim were Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, his Talmidim, like Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Yoshua. These were all the early Tanoim. Today we're going to be speaking about Rabbi Akiva and his Talmidim, which are what we're going to call the later Tanoim. Even though Rabbi Akiva is really the bridge, and the bridge is going to be the Bar Kokhba rebellion, but we're going to talk about the bridge between the early Tanoim and the later Tanoim, and the later Tanoim. So first of all, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is perhaps one of the most, if not the most famous of the Tanoim. Everybody knows how he started learning late in life. This is an Avos Rabbi Nosson, first source on your sheet. Ben Arboim Shana Haya Velo Shana Klum. He was 40 years old and he didn't know anything. And he was once standing Omed Alapia Be'er, and he said, Michakak Evan Zu, and he saw that underneath the where the water flowed, there was a hole in the rock. And he asked, who made this hole in the rock? So Amrullah Hamayim Shatadir Noflim Alabikoyom, the water slowly hitting the rock and was boring a hole in the rock. Amrullah Akiva, Yata Kore Avanim Shachkumayim, Miyad, Haya Rabbi Akiva Dan Kovachomer Biatmo. Ma rach pisalasa koshe. Just like water, which is so soft. Water is able to break through a hard rock. Divrei Torah, which are kasha kebarzel, Torah, which is hard, and it's hard to learn, and it's serious stuff. Alachas kama v'kama shiachakaku es libi. My heart of stone, which is so not open to Torah, if water can penetrate stone, then Torah for sure can penetrate to my heart. Miyad chazer lilmo Torah holach v'yashav ne'er Rabbi Yezer v'lefnei Rabbi Yoshua. So he decided to take upon himself to start to learn, and he went and he learned by Rabbi Ezra and Yeshua, we learned about last time. The Gedoli Ador from the door before him, so he went to go learn by Rabbi Ezra and Rabbi Yeshua. So this was the famous Rabbi Akiva.
When did he die?
Hold on 1 second, we just started up with him. He's still alive, why should we kill him? So the Gemara in Menachos and Daf Memtes, Amid Beis, tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu once, when he was up in Shamayim, unclear exactly when this was in the which could be important, but Moshe Rabbeinu is up in Shamayim, and he sees a Kadosh Baruch Hu that he's putting ksarim on all the osias, crowns on all the letters, as you know, in the Sefer Torah, there's crowns. So he asked Kadosh Baruch Hu, why in the world are you doing this? Why are you spending your time doing this? So he said, because one day there's going to be a man, his name will be Akiva ben Yosef, and he's going to be doresh every single little crown on every single letter. This was Rabbi Akiva's style of darshaning. You should start to pay more attention to the different Tanoim, how they darshan. Rabbi Akiva makes a big deal about a dot, every extra little thing. Rabbi Akiva is doresh that. Meaning you're going to be people who are doresh more like kal v'chomers and logical arguments. Rabbi Akiva is doresh a lot, every little extra little thing in the Torah. And here, the Gemara says that he was doresh every single crown. Moshe Rabbeinu said, really? Can I see this person? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends him in a teleportal, sends him to Rabbi Akiva's Beis Medrash, and he sits in the back of Rabbi Akiva's Beis Medrash. Here's Rabbi Akiva giving shir, and he has a tremendous chalishas hadas, because he doesn't understand a word of what's going on in the shir. And then finally, when Rabbi Akiva, someone asks Rabbi Akiva in the shir, like, mecha teisi, like, what's your marker for that? So Rabbi Akiva said, oh, it's Allah Moshe Sinai. So when Moshe Rabbeinu heard that, he felt a little bit better. So it's a little bit of a strange Gemara, because, like, first of all, why didn't he understand what was going on? And that's why it's a little bit of a question. Did this take place when Moshe went up to Shemayim? Was this before he got the Torah? Then it makes sense that he didn't understand everything that was going on. If it was after he got the Torah, well, didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu teach Moshe Rabbeinu everything that a Talmud Vosik is also L'Schadesh? How come he didn't know what Rabbi Akiva was saying in the Shir? So it's also strange, like, what is this, like an ego thing for Moshe Rabbeinu? Like, he's upset because he doesn't understand. And then when they mention his name, he's like, oh yeah, that's right, me, Moshe Rabbeinu. Now he feels better about himself. Like, it's very strange, like the whole back and forth. But the Gemara is clearly showing tremendous appreciation for the Chochmah and the knowledge of Moshe, of Akiva, perhaps even Rabbi Akiva, perhaps even comparing him here to Moshe Rabbeinu. As we mentioned and you saw in this Gemara, he was a Talmud of Rabbi Ezra and Rabbi Yoshua, and he actually lived in Lod, which is, you know, where the airport is nowadays. He lived there with Rabbi Ezra, and he only moved to Bnei Brak. Famously, he lived in Bnei Brak. So he only moved to Bnei Brak after his teacher's death, after the death of Rabbi Eliezer and Lot. Now, before he died, and we know about his death, now we'll get to his death, he famously was killed by the Romans, that they flayed his skin with metal with rakes, okay, with a metal comb, which we know was a form of what's the word?
Torture.
When torture, thank you, of torture that the Romans would do to some of their prisoners. So he famously died al Kiddush Hashem, right? The famous story where he said, "My whole life, I was wondering if I'd have the opportunity to Mekadesh Hashem, right, to serve Hashem b'chol nafshecha, and here I have the opportunity to." And he said, "Shema." But before he died, he was put in jail, and this famous Gemara is about how his Talmidim would come and he would teach them from the jail. Apparently, they either allowed him visitors or they stood by the window of his jail cell and he would teach them Torah through the jail cell. Another very important and famous Gemara about Rabbi Akiva, and something that's very inspirational about Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva in general is a very inspirational character. He didn't really start learning until he was 40. Some of you are probably sitting here thinking, like, I'm 18 years old, and it's so hard for me to, like, get into the learning because I'm starting so late. You know, I have cousins, they went to, like, serious yeshivas when they were younger, 12, 13, 14, they already know so much, I didn't learn anything. Why, my high school, why didn't they teach me anything? Right? We've heard this line before, I'm so upset. So it's okay, 18 is plenty of time. Rabbi Akiva was 40. Akiva was 40. So it's plenty of time. If you're serious and you dedicate yourself, you'll see you can become a very big Talmud Chacham. So Rabbi Akiva is very inspirational on that level. Another reason Rabbi Akiva is very inspirational is because he's tenacious. Right? One of those words we learn from football games. Tenacious. He doesn't give up. He keeps going. This is the Gemara in Yevamos. Samach Bezim and Bez. Rabbi Akiva Omer. Loma Torah b'yalduso yama Torah b'ziknuso. Rabbi Akiva is learning a pshat in the Pasuk. Pasuk that says, Baboker zara zarecha, in the morning you should plant your seeds, uba'erev al tanach yadecha, in the evening also. You should continue to plant in the evening as well. He understood that to mean a metaphor for life. That when you're young, you should plant seeds. You should teach when you're young. But you should continue to teach when you're old. And he lived this in his own life. Why? Because it says he had 12,000 zugim, 12,000 chavrusas, 24,000 talmidim, hayulol Rabbi Akiva. Migivas ad Antipras, across the whole country. The kulan mesu b'perach echad b'mnei shlo nagu kavod zeh b'zeh. And they all died at one time. We know this was the time period between Pesach and Shavuos. They all died because they weren't noe kavod zeh, they didn't give each other the proper kavod. And it's just amazing that they didn't give each other proper kavod, because Rabbi Akiva is famous. What was his famous saying? B'haf l'recha kamocha. And his Talmidim apparently didn't internalize at least enough that message of B'haf l'recha kamocha. They weren't nagu kavod zeh b'zeh. And haya ha'olam shamim, the world was bereft of Torah. Ad shebar Rabbi Akiva itzor b'sinu shebadarim. But Rabbi Akiva said, you know what, I'm old, I just lost 24,000 talmidim, my life's work has been lost, I'm not giving up. And he went to Rabbi Sinu shebadarim v'shana lahem, and he found new talmidim. And who were these new talmidim? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, and v'heim hamidu Torah ososhan. They're the ones who continued Torah. So Rabbi Akiva's entire first generation of talmidim were lost, and it was only his second generation of talmidim that were the ones that spread Torah forward for all of history. So this is Rabbi Akiva. The most important event on a political level that occurred in Rabbi Akiva's life was the Bar Kokhba Rebellion. The Bar Kokhba Rebellion was, and is called in some places, like, I don't know, the second or the third Roman Jewish War, I forgot what number they call it, because it was part of the ongoing feud and tension between the Jews and the Romans. The Romans took over, and if you remember, we saw Gemara that said that the Romans came 180 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Romans were already starting to influence and have their power in Eretz Yisrael. There was ongoing feuds. The Beis HaMikdash was already destroyed. Remember, that was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the beginning of the Tanoim. Beis HaMikdash was already destroyed. But after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Jews were still able to live in Eretz Yisrael. Remember? Tein li yavne v'chachameha. The Sanhedrin was operating with Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, all these people. Rabbi Akiva sat on the Sanhedrin. So the Sanhedrin was running. Jewish life was prospering. Torah was prospering. Things were great on a Torah level. But there was a lot of persecution from the Romans. Heavy taxes. There was an emperor. His name was Trajan, a Roman emperor, and he had a war with the Persians, which were right next door in Iran, and he didn't like the fact that some of the Jews in Persia were assisting the Persians against him, and therefore he felt he had to take out retribution against all the Jews. There's another emperor that takes over after him, Hadrian, and Hadrian is famous for his At first he tells the Jews actually that they can rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Then he reneges when he realizes it's maybe not such a good idea. He builds a pagan shrine on the Makom HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, which, remember, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, as we said. So the area is open. He builds a pagan shrine there. He renames Yerushalayim with a Roman name. Aelia Capitolina is what he called it, and it was actually called that by the non-Jews for many centuries until the Arabs came in like the 600s, 700s. So those are some of the things, those are some of the provocations that led up to it. But the Bar Kokhba rebellion begins as small little pockets of Jews who were fighting against the Romans and trying to get the Romans out of Eretz Yisrael. And the Bar Kokhba rebellion was initially supported by Rabbi Akiva. That seems to be the pashtus, that Rabbi Akiva supported the rebellion and supported Bar Kokhba himself. The Yerushalmi has a very interesting statement. Take a look at the Yerushalmi here. Tani Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Akiva Rebbe, he was Talmud Rabbi Akiva, Hayadorish Dorach Kochav Miyakov. So he was Dorish the Pasuk of Dorach Kochav Miyakov, that a star will come out of Yaakov, that Dorach Kuzba Miyakov, Bar Kochva's name originally, Rabbi Shimon Bar Kochva, his name was originally Bar Kuzba. That was his original name, Shimon ben Kuzba. But we call him Bar Kochba because apparently Rabbi Kiva darshaned on his name that Bar Kuzba, al tikri Bar Kuzba, ela Bar Kochba. And that it's a reference to the pasuk that a star will shine forth from Yaakov, a reference to Mashiach. And that Rabbi Akiva, kadha v'chomei Bar Kuzba, when Rabbi Akiva would see Bar Kochba, hava omar, dein hu malcha Mashiach. This is the Melech HaMashiach. Amar le Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta. Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta didn't agree with Rabbi Akiva, apparently. And he used to say, yalu asavim bilachayach. Grass will sprout from your cheeks, meaning after you're buried and you're in the ground and the grass is sprouting from your decaying body. V'yadayin ben David lo yavo. Optimism, huh? He said, you think this is Mashiach? You will be dead in the ground with plants growing from you before Mashiach comes, was his response to Rabbi Akiva. Now, I'm sure he believed, I'm sure he still had a belief that Mashiach will come every day, but he was responding to what Rabbi Akiva was saying. Rabbi Akiva was apparently putting a lot of stock into Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba was, we don't know so much about him, but he was a Jewish soldier who was apparently leading a very successful rebellion originally, and Rabbi Akiva was supporting him. If you take a look at the Rambam goes even more extreme. The Rambam says, this is the famous Rambam about how to determine who Mashiach is, so we're not going to get into it now because of time, but if you take a look on the second line, Rabbi Akiva Chacham Gadol Michachme Mishnah Haya. Everybody knows Rabbi Akiva. He was a Chacham Gadol. V'huaya Nosei Kalev Shel Ben Kuzi Bo HaMelech. And he was the Nosei Kalev. Now, officially what that means is that he was like his like lackey. Like he carried his like bow and arrow for him. Now, I imagine that this is just like he's just speaking in flowery lashon. But v'huaya Omer Alav Shaya Melech HaMashiach. V'dima Hu V'chol Chachmei Dor Shu Melech HaMashiach. And he and everyone else in the door, all the other Chachamim, obviously not this Rav, what was his name? Rav Yehuda Bar Tota. Obviously not Rav Yochanan Ben Torta. But the Chachmei Hador, they all sided with him. They thought he was Melech HaMashiach. Now the Ravid here quotes from the Bavli, because what I quoted from you is the Yushalmi. The Bavli has a slightly different spin on things. And the Bavli says that Bar Kokhba was a Melech for a while, and he came to the Rabbanim and he said, I'm Mashiach. And they said, oh really? Well, it says about Mashiach that he'll have certain spiritual abilities. They tested him, and when they saw that he didn't have it, katluhu, they killed him. So according to the Gemara Bavli, we actually killed Bar Kokhba. So as you see, there's a little bit of a mixed heritage here, or a mixed legacy of Bar Kokhba. We were for him, we weren't for him. The pashtus is that originally everybody was with him, and that at a certain point the power got to his head, and then he soured. The Yerushalmi actually says that he was doing great. He was defending the Jews. It looks like in Yerushalayim he didn't do so well, but they got out of Yerushalayim somehow. And the end of the war, the end of the rebellion, was in Beitar, right? The city of Beitar, which is in the Gush. So the city of Beitar, which today is a very It's a very religious city, the city of Beitar. I mean, there's old Beitar, which is next to new Beitar, which is probably also very religious. I'm not really sure, but it's all Arab. There's an old Beitar, but the new Beitar is Hasidish and Haredi. It's in the Gush. So Beitar was where the last stand was for the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Bar Kokhba and his soldiers escaped to, it was a fortress, very fortified area, and they were actually doing very well, holding off the Romans. And then Bar Kokhba started to get paranoid, and he started killing his own family members because he thought that they were trying to plot against him. And one of those people was Rav Elazar HaModoy. Rav Elazar HaModoy was one of the great Chachmei HaMishnah, and he was in Beitar at the time, and he apparently was davening all day for protection against the Romans. And Chazal say that it was his tfilos that were holding the Romans at bay. And he killed his own uncle. Bar Kokhba killed his uncle, Rav Elazar HaModoy, because he, the whole story with the Shomranim, whatever, he started to get concerned that and paranoid that they were plotting against him, and he killed his own uncle. And then eventually the Romans were able to conquer, and they say that the massacre that the Romans inflicted upon the Jews, men, women, children, that the entire countryside was just littered with bodies. The Rishalmi describes an area that's as big as the city of Tveria all the way to the city of Tzipori, that they were able to take bodies and go around the entire perimeter, you know, around and around the perimeter of that area with dead bodies. There were so many dead bodies. And the Romans, as a punishment to the Jews, did not allow the Jews to bury any of the bodies. So all the bodies sat out there, baking in the sun and rotting. And it took a few years until they let them bury the bodies. However, when they went to go bury the bodies, they saw that the bodies had not decayed, or at least not decayed to the degree that they should have decayed during that time. And at this moment, goes there, the fourth bracha of benching, which is the bracha of Atov v'Hametiv. What is this? What's this lashon of Atov v'Hametiv, which is the bracha that we make every once in a while? So you take a look. The Gemara says, the last source on your sheet, Hatov shlo hisrichu v'Hametiv shenitnu l'kvura. We say Hatov for the fact that the bodies didn't decompose, and Hametiv on the fact that they allowed us to eventually bury the bodies. Now Rav Kook says an interesting ha'ara. He says that after the Chorban, it was very hard to make the third bracha of benching. What's the third bracha of benching? No, the bracha before that. Cool. I'm sorry. That's the fourth bracha. No, that's the third bracha. You're right. But what's the third bracha? Say it again. I'm sorry. Uvenei Yerushalayim Yirat Kodesh Meherav Yameinu Baruch Atah Hashem Bonei Beracham Av Yerushalayim Amen. So Rav Kook says, and also the bracha before that, the second bracha. What's the second bracha? So Rav Kook says that it was very hard for them to make those brachas. It was hard to bench because it was so painful. You know that there's a halacha that if there's a knife on the table, you're supposed to put a knife away before you bench. Because we're concerned that when you get up to the brachas that all speak about Eretz Yisrael, you're going to be so distraught about the fact that we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, you're going to stab yourself. So somebody once came to the Rebbe in Skver Rebbe, and asked him if we should still have to be knowing that halacha. Because Lameisa, we don't find that people are stabbing themselves during benching out of pain over the Chorban. So is it okay to leave the knife on the table when you bench? So he said, absolutely not. It's not okay. They asked him why. Nobody's stabbing themselves. So he said, no, but you have to leave the knife on the table in order to remind you that there was a time in history when there were Jews who would stab themselves when they would get up to the benching because the Beis HaMikdash is still not rebuilt. But anyway, Rav Kook has this very nice aura that they made Atov v'Hametiv as an expression of optimism that the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt. And he says that that's why they dafka did it over the bodies. Because even though on the one hand you can look at the bodies as like, wow, this is so sad. It's 3 years later, we're burying everyone's body. On the other hand, there's an optimistic way to look at it. Look, the bodies didn't decompose. So even in the heart of darkness, a person, right, 10th grade English, even in the heart of darkness, so a person is able to see the optimism, and that is why they made the bracha of Atov v'Hametiv. So Rav Yitz shared with me, and I subsequently looked it up, and someone else here made a ha'ara also about it. Someone else asked me about it in Shir. Who was it? Yeah, Johnny. Okay. So In the Igeris of Sri Ragon, which we have on the shelf over here somewhere, in the Igeris of Sri Ragon, which is a letter written by one of the late, right there, we have an English even, if you want to read it, it's very interesting, with that like peach-colored binding. The Igeris of Rav Sri Ragon. So Rav Sri Ragon was one of the late Gaonim, one of the later Gaonim, and the community in Karawan wrote to him and said, can you just tell us, like, what's the whole Masorah? So he just writes a whole letter going through the Masorah. So he writes in there that Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 Talmidim, and that they were all killed in a Shmad. Now, a Shmad means persecution. Now, what are you talking about? I thought the Gemara in Yevamo said that they were all killed because they weren't, between Pesach and Shavuos, because they weren't Noe Kavod Zeh B'Zeh. So there are those who would like to suggest a conspiracy theory that there's really something else going on in the Gemara, and the Gemara is just trying to cover itself because the Gemara does not want to paint us as rebel rousers and rebellious people. So it says, oh yeah, they all died because they weren't Noe Kavod Zeh B'Zeh. But really, why'd those 24,000 Talmidim die? Because those 24,000 Talmidim were not his Talmidim, but they were those who were, because first of all, there's a Mechilta or a, there's a Midrashic, another Midrashic source that said that Rabbi Akiva in his youth, when he was younger, Talmud Chacham, had 300 Talmidim, which they're considering to be a big number. So 300 Talmidim, so there's a big difference between 300, it's a like different versions, he had 300 Talmidim, he had 24,000 Talmidim. So they say, no, 24,000 Talmidim in the Gemara and Yevamos are not his Talmidim who sat in his shir, but they're people who followed his military ideology or his ideology in terms of how to deal with the Romans. And the Rabbi Akiva was supportive of the Bar Kokhba rebellion, as we saw. And the 24,000 students mean 24,000 people who were inspired by Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Akiva's support of Bar Kokhba. 24,000 soldiers who fought for Bar Kokhba in the rebellion, and they were all killed in a shmad. They were all killed in the battle. They all died in the rebellion. And we know that thousands upon thousands were killed in the Bar Kokhba rebellion. So Rabbi Akiva's, I don't want to say mistaken, but at least al derech hateva, his mistaken support for Bar Kokhba led to the death of 24,000 people who were inspired to fight through his supporting of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. And that's what the Gemara means when it said 24,000 Talmidim, wink wink, of Rabbi Akiva were killed because of their engagement in this rebellion. Rav Soloveitchik in his Haggadah, in his Shirim on the Haggadah, so he famously suggested, and it's been suggested by others as well, but Rav Soloveitchik says it also explicitly, that and I like to quote Rav Soloveitchik because the other theories that come up, these conspiracy theories were suggested by all different types of Jews with different colors and stripes. But Rav Soloveitchik, who was firmly planted in our Masorah, so Rav Soloveitchik there are a lot of kashas that are asked in the Haggadah on that famous story where Rabbi Yezer, it's all the people you know. Maisa be, anyone remember? Maisa be Rabbi
Tarfon.
Yeah, Rabbi Tarfon, who else was there? Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Lezer ben Azariah, Shoyim Esubin ben Abrach, by Rabbi Akiva. So they were all by Rabbi Akiva. Now that you know all these people, what's one big kasha to ask? Rabbi Akiva in relation to them. What was Rabbi Akiva? He was a Talmud. They were all of the earlier generation. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yoshua, the Talmud, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. They were all by Rabbi Akiva. That's like a little strange. They all went to their Talmud. Why did they all go to their Talmud? He should be coming to the Rebbe. What were they doing at his house? Number one. Number two, like, why weren't they with their families? Rabbi Yezer lived in Lod. Like, they were all with their families. Why weren't they with their families? Why are they all hanging out by Rabbi Akiva? Okay, I don't know. Maybe their families all came to Bnei Brak. Maybe it was like a big Shabbaton. Okay, I don't know. Maybe. But what were they all doing? What were they all doing in Bnei Brak together? Why were they by the Talmud's house? Also, if you remember, there's a big machlokas when you have to eat the Korban Pesach by, and by extension, when do you do Magid? When do you finish Magid? When do you finish the Seder by? What does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah hold? It's all Chatzos. But what happened in the story? They were being Mesaper B'tzias Mitzrayim Ad Alos HaShachar. So what were they? What were they? Okay, Rabbi Akiva, very nice. So maybe you'll say home court. You know, it was home courts. So they followed the home court rules. Okay, there could be. That's another kasha people ask. People also ask, like, why didn't they realize that it was morning? Like, didn't they see the light come out? So you can say, no, because they were so involved, they didn't even notice the light was shining on their face. Okay, could be. But Rav Soloveitchik answers all these questions by saying
They weren't at a Seder. I mean, they started a Seder. That was the official reason why they met. But they were hiding out, and they were planning the Bar Kokhba rebellion. That's what they were doing. They were planning the Bar Kokhba rebellion. That's why they stayed up after the Zman. They paskin like Rabbi Zalman Azariah. They stopped. They didn't have to keep going. The Talmud ben Makom Rabbo, he's not going to argue ben Makom Rabbi Zalman Azariah. But they continued all night because they were planning until the Talmidim finally, you know, knocked on the door, and they quickly, you know, like put away all their, like, you know, daggers and their maps, and they took out like the charoses, and they're like, oh, look at that, it's morning, yes. So that's Rav Soloveitchik's suggestion of what was going on there in that Seder in the Haggadah. So all of this provides a very nice theory. Now you should know that just as much as suggested by some, I saw that there are many who are cholik on this, and they show with dating that the Bar Kokhba rebellion wasn't in works yet when Rav Elazar was still alive. All different questions of the dating and the chronology here, but it's a fascinating suggestion. Okay, the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba rebellion, very quickly, the Roman Emperor Hadrian, after squashing the Bar Kokhba rebellion, so he realized not to make the same mistake that Vespasian made. Vespasian had made a very big mistake. When Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai had said, give me Yavne v'chachamea, he said, oh, a bunch of old rabbis sitting and learning, what's the big deal? Yeah, you guys can go learn. And Hadrian realized that the spirit of the nation was the Beis Medrash, was the Torah, that's what kept Klal Yisrael going. And therefore Hadrian, after the Bar Kokhba rebellion, wanted to make sure that this would never happen again. You have to realize, he liked hanging out in Rome, sitting in a bath, being fanned with those big leaves and people dropping grapes in his mouth. He didn't want to have to get on a horse and come to Eretz Yisrael and fight. So therefore, he wanted to make sure this would not happen anymore. And he made a gezerah, and the gezeros of Hadrian are famous. He's the one who assered Bris Milah, Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh, that? Well, that was with the Greeks. And I think that was with the Greeks. But the Bris Milah and Talmud Torah, and this was a tremendous time period of Mesiras Nefesh. Rabbi Akiva and others who learned Torah in public, they were rounded up. Most of the Asari Haruge Malchus took place during this time. The 10 martyrs that we read about on Tisha B'Av and on Yom Kippur, most of the Asari Haruge Malchus were during this time. Yerushalayim was plowed completely. No more like they plowed it. They didn't let any Jews live there. They still had the pagan shrine, but they plowed the rest of Yerushalayim. The Jews were only allowed into the area once a year on Tisha B'Av to sort of, let them feel the pain even more. So they would be let in, but that was it. He actually, this is when, you know, talking about current events, this is when Judea is renamed Syria Palestina. This is when it's renamed Palestine, right? They always say, Palestine! It's been Palestine for hundreds of years. It has been Palestine for hundreds of years. But it was called Palestine, taking it from its original name, Judea, which sounds a lot like Jew, Judea, because the Hadrian wanted to remove any connection that Klal Yisrael felt to the area. Okay, amazingly, when Hadrian dies, the next person who takes over, so he changes everything. He undoes all of Hadrian's laws, and the Sanhedrin is able to reconvene, finally. They weren't able to convene all this time, because after the Bar Kokhba rebellion, that was it. There was a war against, the rabbis were being hunted and killed, the Asar Ruge Malchus. They can't meet in the Sanhedrin. So after Hadrian passes away, and the new emperor revokes a lot of his, you know, wants to turn a new page a little bit, and revokes a lot of the laws, so that Sanhedrin reconvenes, and this brings us into the second Kufa of the Tanoim, the later Tanoim. And what is this? Where do they reconvene? They reconvene in a city up north called Usha. And if you remember from that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, so it said that they were in Yavne, and then they went to Usha. The truth is they went to Usha earlier, and it looks like they went back to Yavne, and then back to Usha. So now they're finally settling in Usha, and the Sanhedrin is going to be convening in Usha. One of the greatest, though, I skipped one thing. I was talking about the Mesiras Nefesh of the time. One of the greatest displays of Mesiras Nefesh was the display of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. I believe I put it on your source sheet here. Maybe I didn't. Did I? Gemara in Avodah Zarah? Yes. Right in the middle of the sheet. V'homer Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Great Gemara. V'ram zchor oso ish latov Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava shmo. You got to remember who Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was. if it wasn't for him, we would forget all of the laws of Knossos. The Gemara asks, Nishtachu, you forget them? What do you mean? Ligrasinu, just learn them. Elabatlu dine Knossos miYisrael. If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't be able to continue doing dine Knossos. Because Knossos, penalties, fines, deterrents, Knossos are only able to be meted out when you have a Beis Din of Smuchin. What happened? Gazer Malchus HaRisha Gzeira, Kol HaSomech Yehareg. Anyone who gets Smicha will get, be killed. Anyone who gives Smicha will be killed. V'Kol HaNismach Yehareg. Anyone who receives Smicha will be killed. V'Ir Shesomchim Ba Techarev. In any city that's closest to where they give Smicha will be destroyed. U'Tchum Shesomchim Bo Yeyaker. Ma'as Rabbi Yehuda Ben Bava. So what did Rabbi Yehuda Ben Bava do? Halach V'Yashav Ben Shnei Harim Gedolim. So he found himself a place that was like equidistant. I don't know, this is giving a lot of credit to the Romans that like, oh, you're in between two cities, it's equidistant, we're not going to destroy either. I would think they would just destroy both of them. But anyway, Rav Yehuda ben Bava found himself a place that was equidistant between two cities. They can't say, oh, one city is closer. Bein Usha l'Shafra'am. Shafra'am is a city in Eretz Yisrael today. You can drive through it, although it's not the friendliest place because it's an Arab city. Samach Sham Chamisha Zakenim. And wedged, there he was, planted between two cities, he gave smicha to five Zakenim. Who were they? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua, and Rabbi Aviyah's Mosef, Afrav Nechemiah. Now, Kevin Shekiru Bo'evim, as soon as the enemy realized what was going on, Amar Lahem, Bini, Rutsu. So he said quickly to them, run, run, Rav Yehuda ben Bava said. Amru lo Rebbe, v'ata mati alecha, but if we run, what's going to be with you? Now Rav Yehuda ben Bava was a large man. So Amar Lahem, hareni muta lifneim ke'evin she'ein lo hofchim. I'm a big guy. I'm like a rock that they can't move. And he wedged himself between these two mountains. His body was wedged between these two mountains like there was a pass. They couldn't get through. Amru, they say, lo zazu misham, they weren't able to move, ad shenot, so his body didn't move, until they had stabbed him, gimel meos lulonio shalbarzel, with 300 spears, v'yoso kigufu kivara, and they made his whole body like a sieve, like a sifter. That was the only way they were able to move him, because he was wedged between there. So this is, Rav Yehuda ben Bava is one of the Asari Ruge Malchus. He's one of the names that we count in the Asari Ruge Malchus. And his self-sacrifice allowed the continuation of Smicha. Okay, this brings us to just finishing off this middle Tkufa, and I'll just talk about one or two other people, and then we'll save for next time the last Tanoim. But we're talking about this middle Tkufa, which we're calling the period of the Bar Kokhba Rebellion. The early Tkufa were the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That was the period right after the Chorban. Now we're talking about the Bar Kokhba Rebellion. We talked about Rabbi Akiva, obviously. So the few other people I want to talk about. One is Rabbi Akiva's Bar Plukta, and that's Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael are always arguing with each other. Yishmael is an interesting name. Why are we naming people after Yishmael? But Rabbi Yishmael was a bar plukta of Rabbi Akiva, and they had a very different style of darshaning. Rabbi Yishmael, in general, we have the Yud Gimel Midos Shatar Nidreshes Bahem. Where do they come from? Rabbi Yishmael, right? That's what it says there. We're going to talk about one of them in Ian today. So the Yud Gimel Midos Shatar Nidreshes Bahem are from Rabbi Yishmael. He used arguments like Kal v'chomer, Binyan Av. These are more logical arguments. Rabbi Akiva's approach was much more to focus on extra words, extra letters, extra... You know, some of you were doing some of those drushes today about Eile HaDvarim. And, you know, Eile is 35. And then HaDvarim, Dvarim is 2 because it's plural. And then add the Hey. So I don't know if that's Rabbi Akiva, but that, I think that that's more in the style of Rabbi Akiva, not like Rabbi Yishmael. One is more... You know, that's, remember that Gemara we read in Menachos about how Rabbi Akiva was Doresh every crown on every letter. So that Rabbi Yishmael was his Bar Plukta. We have a lot of things in the Gemara that come from the Bei Rabbi Yishmael. You'll often find like, Tana the Bei Rabbi Yishmael. Tana the Bei Rabbi Yishmael. Those were things that were taught in the Bei Rabbi Yishmael, means in the house, in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yishmael. Okay, Rabbi Tarfon is another great... Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva was more on like...
it's things that it's not respectful to call it this, but just that we understand it, things that we would call, oh, that's cute, like cute little things in the psukim, like, oh, there's an extra word, extra letter, we're going to learn a whole din from that. And those are the ones you sometimes scratch your head and be like, okay, I mean, if that's what that extra base is teaching me, but say that's what that extra base is teaching me. So Rabbi Tarfon, I think, if I'm reading correctly, Rabbi Tarfon was a little bit of like a Rabbi Eliezer type of personality. He was very strong. He was trained in Beis Hillel, but he had a... when we say Beis Shammai, by the way, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, we're referring to these people that we're talking about now. And when we say Beis Shammai, we mean Rabbi Eliezer. Remember, he was one who fought against everybody else. And Rabbi Tarfon's another example. There's that famous mission in Brachos, where he wanted to do like Shammai, and he risked his life by leaning when he at night lying down. He said Kriya Shema on the road. So he was a prominent member of Tarfon of the base of the Sanhedrin in Yavne. Remember, next week we're going to be talking about the Sanhedrin in Usha. That's the later Sanhedrins are in Usha. The early Sanhedrin was in Yavne. So Rabbi Tarfon was a critical member of that base medrash. And last is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who we've been talking about. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a descendant of Ezra. He assumed the role of the Nasi when he was 17, when they demoted Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne. And we discussed that. The day that he was instated? Instated, is that a word? No, he was put in. The day that he was put in is referred to in the Gemara as Bo Bayom. That day, and they say that the day that he was put in, he like opened the base medrash for everyone. They added tons and tons of benches to the base medrash. Machlokas, how many exactly did they add? And Rabbi Gamliel got like some Chalisha Sadas, like, whoa, did I run such a tight ship that all these people weren't allowed into the base medrash? Remember, he didn't let people into the base medrash unless they were Tocho Kiboro, if their inside was like the outside. This is a Gemara in Brachos. Brachos. Yeah, not Chav Zayin, Chav Ches, is that what you said? Chav Zayin, Chav Ches, yeah.
Or
be
Zayin of the Bible.
Yeah, in Chav Ches. So the Gemara there talks about Bo Bayom. It says also that day, the entire Maseches Edius was taught on that day. And eventually, Rabbi Elazar was Mephais, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Gamliel, excuse me, and he was reinstated. So if we had to just summarize in three sentences, early Tanoim, Taminim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Chorban, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Gamliel, who was the head of the Sanhedrin in Yavne, and some of the younger figures were Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and these last people that I just mentioned, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, they're the people who lived through the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Because of the Bar Kokhba rebellion, Yerushalayim and the whole center of the country was destroyed. The Jews had to move up north, and that's why they reconvened in Usha. And we will, Mirtz Hashem, next time we get to do the Masorah, we're going to learn about the four or five major Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. And one of those people being Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who's going to be the Nasi. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's child is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. He's going to be the person who compiles the Mishnah. So that's going to be the end of the period of the Tanoim. So we will hopefully get to finish the Tanoim and next time.